So I've been trying to figure out how to do this effectively, and I'm not really sure at this point. The intention of this particular podcast, this particular illustration, whatever you want to call it, was to show some of the difficulties with trying to work over and do macro video. This is something I've been building into for a while, a little bit at a time. Part of the problem with doing this is that I do have some clips to illustrate things, but not long enough clips and not... I've got a lot of other things to talk about. So the clips would either just sit there and just be kind of background thing, or I have nothing visual to show what's going on. So I'm doing this as a podcast where I may intersperse clips in the middle, so you have to kind of go through in sequence here. Or, you know, I may not, as I actually dub this in after the fact to prevent myself from re-recording the entire podcast. So there are several things I've been tackling. I picked up a Canon T2i, sometime back, a few years back, to actually start doing video with it. And I've done some little clips here and there that you've seen. You may have seen. You can go find them if you want to see them. But what I've been trying to do is build up into doing macro video, and there are some challenges to this. The very first challenge that I've run into is just an overall thing with this particular camera, that normal video framing is being done through the LCD in the back. You're not using the viewfinder, because you can't, because the viewfinder is optical, and in order to be actually be recording, you would have to, the mirror has to be up in the mirror box, which closes out the viewfinder, so
it's not going to work that way.
Not for this particular design. The other thing about the T2i is that the LCD on the back is fixed. It is not articulated. It doesn't swing out and tip up and tip down and all this kind of jazz. And that really does help a lot with video because an SLR body is not shaped for video work. And it's kind of, even if you could use the viewfinder on it, it's a little bit awkward. But since you can't use the viewfinder and have to use the LCD, you're doing one of the most unstable ways of holding the camera, which is to hold it out far enough from your face so you can focus on the LCD screen, which, of course, greatly increases the instability of the whole system. When I'm teaching students about using the camera, this is one of the things that I'm like, try not to ever use the LCD on the back for framing because it's very unstable, and I teach them how to hold a camera stable. And this is for still images. It's just to avoid little bits of blur from camera shake. So in video, of course, this is a huge difference because you're now, any little twitching that you're doing is going to show up in the video and induce seasickness and have people downvoting you on YouTube and all that kind of jazz. Even though there's people out there that are still shooting video with their phones in vertical format. Hard to believe, but it's true. You can find them. So there's this issue with doing it that way, and it's rather awkward to kind of do it. And I do have some clips along those lines where I did some initial tests with them. So one of the things that I did was to... I looked these things over for a while. You can get HDMI monitors for video work, for DSLRs and stuff, the plug-in. They're fairly expensive, and I was not deep enough into video. I'm not deep enough into video, at least at this point, to worry about that. And I was looking for an inexpensive way of doing this. And found one, actually, and it's surprising how simple this is. There will probably be a link in here. But the basic premise is, there are some inexpensive little LCD monitors that are used for backup cameras in cars. You can pick these up online for a relatively low cost. I think the one that I got is 4.5 inches for $15, something along those lines. And they just take a direct plug in. So the wire that's included with the T2i, there's a video out cord that's a combination USB cord, a kind of expanded USB. You just plug that into the camera, and you can plug the other end into any video playback device that you want, you know, a monitor or a TV or what have you, or a VCR if you wanted to do that. Betamax, of course. So the backup monitor has an RCA plug in it, and so you can just plug directly into that. So the only thing missing with this is a power source for the little monitor to make it portable. You know, it normally runs off of car power, so it's running off of 12-volt DC. So you have to get a 12-volt DC battery. Well, they are available. You can get little rechargeable batteries for that. So this is a little part of the saga that we're gonna get to. So I did some initial tests with this. I took this out, and I took out a monopod to do the shooting. And I went out after some frogs while we had the great tree frogs were calling extensively in the area. So I went out with the monopod and I did some initial shots with those. And this is halfway decent, but when you're talking about macro magnifications, and you're talking about, of course, you're doing this at night and the light source. Well, it all depends on what your light source is. So I haven't gotten any dedicated light source for the camera at this point. So the very first test that I did were with a headlamp, with my little, my fancy-dancy headlamp that could do everything. And it's very useful. It's bright enough to do video with. The camera will compensate to a degree. However, you can't close the aperture down too much or you are going to darken things. So the difficulty with this, at night especially, is that when the aperture is not closed very far, your depth of field is very short, which in macro work, it's already shortened anyway. So just little wobbles and twitching of the monopod can actually take things in and out of focus. And this is one of the big things with macro work, that this will occur. If you're doing any kind of freehanding or any kind of lightly stabilized types of video, this is what's going to happen. So this is showing, and you can see this. What was also showing at the time was the difficulty that I was having. I'm not sure. One of the tests I was doing, I was attempting to see and focus with the LCD on the back of the camera while keeping the headlamp aimed at the subject, in this case the frog, which of course was attached to my head, so I had to be careful how I tipped in my head. Well, looking at the LCD on the back, I had to be looking through the bifocals, you know, the progressive lenses that I had. I had to be looking through the bottom of the lens, so my head had to be tipped back a little bit. It was rather interesting contortions trying to get this to keep this lit, not move my head around, still maintain focus, and I had to keep my eyes pretty much on the LCD viewfinder to make sure that I wasn't doing any little twitches with the camera to come out of focus. This was not working. So I got an external viewfinder for this, which works a whole lot better because then you can put it where you need it. You can angle it where you need it. It is easily twice the size of the LCD on the back of the camera. So focusing is better and sharper. The color is not quite on. The sharpness isn't quite perfect or anything along these lines. It is a relatively cheap monitor, but it is primarily used for pinning down focus and for maintaining your framing while in a position that works halfway decently. So then the next step was getting proper lighting that was actually with the camera and not on my head so that it would be pointing where the camera was. And I talked about in a previous podcast, I had the little LCD bulb spotlight that would plug into an external battery pack, like one of the rechargers, USB rechargers for a phone or something like that. So the output is about 5 volts. So it's a little less than that, I think. I was using this for macro focusing, for macro still photography. So I decided to give it a try for macro video and just attach the battery pack to the little frame, the stabilizing frame that I was using for the camera. I did get a little, I don't even know what you want to call it, but basically there's a little rack which allows the camera to kind of dangle from your hand and let the weight of the camera kind of stabilize the camera itself so that it wasn't so much dependent on your hand motion. It kind of works. It works better than, just hand-holding. Give or take. It's probably a little bit better than a monopod, but not a lot, I would say. But anyway, I attached the light source to it. I was doing that, and that helped a lot. That did help because then, you know, the light source was always pointing at my subject. Now it was direct, and I am going to change that. I'm going to get a different light source. But for the time being, it was working, and it was providing adequate light for the focusing. Then the next step, of course, is getting a stable rig, one that isn't going to twitch around a lot. And the biggest difficulty with this, with macro work, you're often at an odd angle, and you may be aiming up or down. I talked about some time back, and I'll have a link to that, of using a tripod for macro work, and the difficulties with this, and there are quite a few difficulties with it. In fact, most of the macro work that I do, still photography, mind you, is handheld. But I'm doing that with a flash unit to provide adequate light for the pictures when I'm doing it. And of course, I am taking the picture at the time when focus is bang on. And this means, again, with that very short depth of field, I can be just wiggling just tiny little amounts. And we're talking millimeters and stuff. But you can be wiggling just a little bit, and you're going to go in and out of focus with this. And, you know, macro work and autofocus doesn't go together, especially not with the lens I'm typically using for macro work, which does not have autofocus. However, it is something that's a little bit tricky to manage. So when it comes to video, that little instability shows up a lot, and you will see it in the clips quite a bit. Things are going in and out of focus on every clip that I was doing. Now, the tripod has difficulty because the tripod is going to be, first of all, you've got to get it fixed in precisely the right position. With a macro subject, that may mean anything from just a few centimeters off the ground to half a meter or something along those lines. Those are fairly typical. One of the frogs that I was shooting was about 1.5 to 1.75 meters off the ground, getting close to eye level. So there's a lot of playing around that you might have to do with a tripod. That's to get just the right position for it. Also, of course, with some of these subjects, is setting up a tripod. You have to be very careful not to disturb anything that, for instance, your macro subject is on, any of the plants that they might be on. There's a branch and make too much noise, do too much things, and your frog leaves or something along those lines. So setting up a tripod is a bit challenging in and of itself. And then there's the one really key point that comes up. For most kinds of photography, your pivot point is going to be the tripod itself directly underneath the camera. And for instance, when the, you know, when the bride and the groom are walking past, when the Jaguar is running directly at you or whatever. Not directly at you, because that doesn't apply for this. But you're going to pivot at the tripod, and you can pan with the camera and just kind of follow your subjects around. But with macro work, what you find is that your pivot point is the subject and not the tripod, not the camera itself. That the subject may be moving around, and you may have to move past leaves. You may have to come around as the subject changes position. You may have to come around and circle around the subject a little bit, either a small arc or a large one, to maintain good framing on, you know, the face, the front of the subject, the insect, the frog, the what have you, whatever it is that you're shooting macro work of. So the pivot point is more often the subject. And of course, that's very hard to do with a tripod, because tripods don't have a tendency to kind of swing around easily in an arc with your subject as your central point. So there's a lot of difficulty with this. Using a tripod for macro work, whenever you can do it, it's ideal. And using a tripod for macro video work, of course, it's much more ideal for that. But there's not a lot of times that you can do it. So one of the goals is to try and get a stable rig, one that doesn't wiggle or wobble around a lot while doing macro video work. This may be an insurmountable challenge, or it may be that there are at times that this can be done and at other times it cannot be done. And I'm still working that out right now. I'm still playing around with stabilizing rigs. I started with an initial one and I switched to another. But there is a clip where I actually go in on a bullfrog that was sitting on the ground and going close. And he was, I say he, I don't know, it was remarkably patient and cooperative in this case. I think it was basically blinded by the light, had no freaking idea. Blinded by the light, and had no freaking idea what I was doing. So I managed to get in and go in from a kind of straight-on shot down to an almost eye-level portrait shot, almost profile, which did work fairly well. However, getting into that position with the video is really rough and shaky and jiggly and annoying. And it's annoying to me. It's probably far more annoying to somebody else. So finding a stabilized rig that would do this. They do make stabilizers that are made for generic video work. And there's a lot of variations of them. You can spend a lot of money doing it. The inexpensive ones generally have a counterweight which sits on an arm down below the camera. So what happens is the pivot point sits kind of between the camera and the weight that's beneath it. That's where your hand goes, but it has a kind of free pivot. So the camera just has its own kind of stability with a weight hanging down beneath it, and that keeps it straight and level, which is fine if you're shooting straight and level. Macro work, you are probably not shooting straight and level. The other issue with this, of course, may be that you want to get a lot closer to the ground than that little counterweight hanging down beneath the camera will let occur. There are gyro-stabilized ones, generally not for a heavier DSLR rig. They generally make those for lighter weight, like you're using your phone or your GoPro action camera, whatever the hell you might be using. Please don't tell me about it. I don't want to know. But the I'm not trying to badmouth these things, but there is, I'm used to the SLRs and I'm used to the quality that they're putting out, and I don't really have any use for a helmet-mounted camera or anything along those lines, and I'm really trying to avoid using phones for any of this kind of jazz. So the a gyroscopic stabilizer for an SLR would be extremely expensive, have to be a fairly potent, powerful thing. So skipping that idea right now and just going with something simpler. There's a couple other arm rigs that I might be able to rig up for macro. So this is going to be kind of an ongoing thing. But right now I'm just kind of working out the kinks of stuff and you can see some of the differences. So there are examples. I do have some fairly good close-ups. For instance, a small praying mantis. That happened to be in the backyard that I was, I had the misting bottle out for. We'd had a very long period without rain and very hot days. So I had a tendency to take the misting bottle out with me from time to time. And if I found mantises anywhere in the area, I'd start blasting all the leaves and stuff with mist, with water. Which they were delighted for. They were like, oh yes, give me some water. So they would actually come out and show, you know, they'd sop up the door. I've got pictures. You can look at it. You know, I don't have to tell you what it is. You can look at it. But I have video of them drinking the water off of the leaves. Well, no, I don't, actually, as I interject here and put in a little clip after I made the video. I used a different clip that doesn't actually show the mantis drinking from the leaves, but I do have it actually drinking from its, like, knuckles, from its forelegs. But again, now, the last rig that I used, the last little clip that I have, was with the stabilizing rig that I set up, which basically is a, it's a it's a stroboframe flash bracket that I'd actually used for weddings. And I changed around the way that the camera was sitting on it, but basically it meant that the arm that held the flash up above it was the arm that I was using to support the camera with. And it would let me hold it at a slight angle. So, it's not horrendous. It could be better. And this is using the camera itself as its own counterweight to dangle from an arm above it, rather than having a counterweight beneath the camera. However, I'm going to be working these things out and seeing what's going to work best. But anyway, you can take a look at these little clips and see the differences and understand. I think I might have some pictures of the rigs that I'm using now, too, just to give you an idea. But you can take a look at these things and see how they work out and what you think about them and recognize that if you are going to be doing macro video, this is not a simple little thing to get into, and there's probably a lot of little customizations that you're going to do for your own styles and for your own uses or needs. But the primary thing I think to recognize is that macro video introduces a lot of little quirks and issues of its own, and that you're going to have to try and find a way around these. Or you can watch me do it and laugh. That might be a good thing to do too. I'll be back a little bit later on. But, whoa, wait, back up, not done yet. Mentioned something that I was going to talk about later on in the podcast and then completely forgot to talk about it. So, doing this thing with the external monitor, putting this monitor together, I was out running tests with it, and right after the clip with the bullfrog, the system stopped working, and I thought it was just the batteries for the camera itself, and so I took it back in and charged the batteries and was messing with it, and turns out that, no, it was the monitor that stopped working. And I'm starting to sit there and think, oh man, cheap piece of crap that I bought, and this is what I get for paying low prices for something. So I put the monitor on an external power source, and it turned out that the monitor itself was working fine. So I took the battery pack, which I wouldn't have thought would have run out that quickly. I took the battery pack, I plugged it into the charger, and the charger was saying that it was fully charged. So I took it off the charger, and I did a voltage test on it, and the voltage was only coming up at 4.5 volts, which was not the 12 volts that it was supposed to be. So I'm thinking, oh, well, cheap-ass battery pack. I gotta look at replacing the battery pack. So while I am looking up the battery packs to look for a replacement one, I happen to come across somebody's little note about them, regarding them, because they had problems with them too, and they were running low voltage. And one person made a comment in there that said, oh, yeah, well, you have to have the battery pack switched on when it's plugged in to charge, otherwise it won't charge properly. And I thought, well, this is odd, but maybe it's the way that they wired things in sequence, because there's multiple little cells that are inside these things to bring it up to 12 volts. So I switch the battery pack on. Has a nice little switch. It's handy for it. Switch the battery pack on and plugged it into the charger, and all of a sudden the charger's saying, oh, I'm in the middle of charging right now. Actually, what it did was it just produced a red light instead of a green light, but that's what it actually says if you know how to translate charger. So after an hour or so, I had to leave the house, and I didn't fully trust this battery pack, so I wasn't going to leave it on, but I took it off and I did a voltage test on it at that point, and it was back up to 11 volts. I said, oh, okay. So just be aware of this, that I think some of the battery packs that you might get for this, if they do not instruct you about this, you may want to try it anyway, is to switch the battery pack on when you're charging it and see if it works. It has been working fine since that time, and in fact, I haven't even run it flat yet with all the little video clips that I was doing since then. But I thought I had to tell you about that one and go through that story anyway. Okay, now you can go do the music again. No, really, go ahead.